Yeah, so I'm going to talk about the topology of deformation spaces, and I just want to. So what does this have to do with what the anti-lamination conjecture, or now theorem, or classification? So the point is, the anti-lamination give you a classification of hyperbolic free manifolds. So it gives you, there are these end invariants, and there is a bijection between the space of end invariants and the space of hyperbolic free manifolds, which we've denoted AH of n. So this is a space of hyperbolic free manifolds. Now, this space naturally has a topology on it, okay, coming from the representations. So the H is for hyperbolic, and the A is for algebra, because we're giving a topology on the space of manifolds via the algebra of the representation. On the other hand, the end invariants don't really have a topology on them. There's some simple cases where they do have a there does happen to be a sort of a simple case where they do have a topology, but even in that case, the topology on the space of end invariants doesn't match up with the topology here. So what I want to talk about today is what sort of some of the different things that can happen in this topology that are maybe one would consider to be a bit strange or pathological. So the first thing I wanted to mention, so what if we take this simple case? So T hat, this is going to be the punctured torus. So this punctured torus, as Jeff mentioned yesterday, this was the first case where the ending lamination conjecture was proven by Minsky. So what is AH of the punctured torus? Well, this is representations of the free group on two generators with the commutator parabolic. So what is the anti-lamination theorem in this particular case? Well, to set it up, what is it? So I want to think of D, this is going to be the closed unit disk. Well, what do we think of as the interior of the disk? The interior of the disk we can think of as being the hyperbolic plane. Well, the hyperbolic plane you can also think of as being the Teichmoor space for the punctured torus. So I want to think of the closed unit disk as being the Teichmoor space of the punctured torus compactified. And then I want to let delta, this is going to be the diagonal, and the boundary of D cross the boundary of D. And then what is the space of end invariance? Well, the space of end invariance is a product of this compactified Teichmoor space with the diagonal removed and with the following theorem of Minsky. Which says that there exists a continuous bijection nu from the disk across the disk minus this diagonal of the boundary to AH T hat. So this is the anti-lamination conjecture in this special case. So this is a pretty nice space, right? I mean, it's a manifold of the boundary. Notice I wrote continuous bijection here. I didn't write homeomorphism. And the fact of the matter is it's not. So what else? Yeah, so what else do I want to say? So Anderson and Canary, and also McMullen, showed that the inverse is not continuous. In fact, McMullen said something a little bit stronger than this, which I might talk about a bit later. So we have this really nice space, and we have a continuous bijection onto our space of punctured torus groups, but the inverse isn't continuous. And in fact, this space is not even locally connected. So some really bizarre things are happening over here that aren't happening over here. So I stated this theorem first because it's, in some sense, it's the easiest to state. I mean, this is a pretty concrete object. And I think I'll talk about this in the afternoon. So this is just a preview of that. Okay, but what's really the starting point of this story? So the starting point of this story is some work of Anderson and Canary. And I want to talk about that, and then we'll, as I said, it will lead into this theorem about AH of the puncture torus group not being locally connected. And there's lots of interesting things that happen along the way. Okay, so what was this original work of Anderson and Canary? So Dick mentioned this on, well, a couple days ago. In their work, they studied what's called the Book of Eye Bundles, which he mentioned, but I will bring up again. So I want to start off by just talking about some topology. So we all know what an eye bundle is. This is just a surface across the interval. Well, what's a book of eye bundles? Well, you take some collection. So what are the pages? So the pages of this book are surfaces with one boundary component. So you take a collection of surfaces that have a boundary component. And those are your pages. And then what is your binding? Your binding is solid torus. So I take these pages and I glue them to the solid torus. And how do I glue them to a solid torus? Well, I take the longitude of the solid torus and I glue the boundary of each of these curves to a... So if I have n pages, I take n parallel copies of this longitude and I glue the boundary of these surfaces to one of these longitudes. Now you can actually draw this picture sitting inside 3-space. So if you want to draw this sitting inside 3-space, what do? Well, you can take a cylinder, and you can think of this as being your solid torus. Well, what is a cylinder? A cylinder, if you thicken it, is topologically homeomorphic to a solid torus. Yeah, the cylinder. There's no top and there's no bottom. It's a surface. This is a surface with boundary. So if you thicken a cylinder, it's a solid torus. And then what are the longitudes? Well, the longitudes are these curves that go around the circumference of the cylinder. And then you glue in your surfaces sitting inside. All right, so this gives us a 2-complex, and now we can thicken that 2-complex to get a 3-manifold. So we thicken these surfaces to become eye bundles, and that's why we have a book of eye bundles. Okay, so these book of eye bundles is sort of I would characterize it as being the simplest example of 3-manifolds that are homotopy equivalent but not homeomorphic. So you get these sort of exotic homotopy equivalences. By permuting the pages, you can get manifolds that have different homeomorphism types. So if by permuting the order of the pages, you get manifolds that are homotopy equivalent, but not homeomorphic. So Dick mentioned this a couple days ago. Well, if you want to do this, what do? You can make each page have a surface of different genus. And then by permuting them, when you look at the book of eye bundles, you'll see that the boundary of the book of eye bundles is going to be bounded by surfaces of different genus. So that's one way to see that they're not homeomorphic. Now, they're clearly still going to be homotopy equivalent, because if I collapse this cylinder over here on the right to just a curve, the 2 complex that I get is going to be homeomorphic. It doesn't matter what order I put the pages in. You're always going to get a homeomorphic 2 complex. Okay, so in fact, well, what happens, let's say, so in fact, you want to, actually, we want to keep track of something more. We want to keep track of marked homeomorphism types. So define one more thing. So if N is, say, a compact 3 manifold, and I probably want to put in some words like irreducible, I don't know. So we can let A of N, this is going to be the space of marked three manifolds. So what do I mean? I want to look at pairs. So this is, I want to look at pairs, M, F, where F is a map from our fixed manifold N to M, and it's a homotopy equivalent. And I want to define an equivalence class. I want to say that M naught, F naught is equivalent to M1, F1, if there exists a homeomorphism phi from M0 to M1 such that this diagram commutes with the homotopy. So let's say in the right, so I want there to be a homeomorphism, and I want that homeomorphism to be in the right homotopy class. For this? Yeah, they are homeomorphic, but they're not marked homeomorphisms. Marked homeomorphic. So the point is that what is this set? So this set, in this special case that we look at, so if N is a book of I bundles, with N pages, then this A of N, well, it's just going to be a finite set. It's going to be a finite set with N minus 1 factorial, with N minus 1 factorial points. There are N minus 1 factorial different marked homeomorphism types. And the point is, you can permute these, there's N pages, so you might think there should be N factorial different permutations, but you're sort of looking at cyclic permutations. There's no natural first page and last page. It's a book with no end. And therefore, you only have... where you put the first page doesn't matter. That's why it's only N minus 1 factorial. Okay, so let's call this... So this is... So Anderson Canary worked this out. Okay, so what is the point of this? The point of this is there is a one-to-one correspondence between components of the interior of A H of N and the set A of N. The components of the interior are, there's a one-to-one map between those and these marked homeomorphism types. If you give me a component of the interior, that corresponds to some marked homeomorphism type of the three-manifold N. Okay, so this you can think of as sort of the first step in understanding the topology of the space, right? You know exactly how many components you have. It's the number of points in this set. And by this Alford's Bears parameterization that was talked about earlier in the week, each of these components is homeomorphic to some Teichmuhr space. So these are each nice manifolds. Now, the question then becomes, what happens when you take all of H, when you take the closure of this space? And the surprising thing, at least it was surprising when it was discovered, I guess, 10 or so years ago, is that what happens is these components that are these disjoint components of the interior, when you take their closures, they start to intersect. So I want to describe how that happens. All right, so to do that, we need a bit more topology. And what I want to do next is I want to take my book of I bundles and I want to remove the core curve of the binding. So we want one more thing. So I'm going to call this the drilled book of I bundles. And so in this, what do? The only change is we're going to remove or drill the core curve of the binding. Okay, so before, what did we do? We took the solid torus and we glued all of these pages to it that were I bundles. Well, we're going to do the exact same thing, except instead of taking a solid torus, we're going to take a solid torus with the core curve removed. Okay. Well, this is really just a torus cross an integral. And let's set up a bit of notation. So I'm going to think of tau. Tau is going to be some marked homeomorphism type. And then n tau is going to be the corresponding three-manifold. And n hat tau is going to be the same. So this is a book of I bundles. And this is the drilled version. Okay, so there's some interesting features of this drilled manifold also. So one of the funny things about this drilled manifold is that it covers itself. Well, there are two things here. All of these cover, so here's two topological facts. One, n tau covers n tau prime, n hat tau prime. For all tau and tau prime. The second sort of funny fact is that these things cover themselves, n tau, n hat tau, and n hat tau prime. If I put a hat on here, the same statement too holds. The n hat tau covers n hat tau prime for all tau and tau prime. So how do you see these two facts? So, well, the key to seeing these two facts is to draw the picture in another way. So I'm going to draw this picture of these manifolds in another way. And this new way I'm going to draw it is I'm going to think of my binding as just a disk, and then I'm going to draw my pages as sort of coming off of it like this. And now I'm going to do the same thing with the drilled version. So now I've drilled the core up. So what is this picture supposed to represent? This disk here, we should think of this disk as being crossed with S1. Okay, that's my solid torus. And then these lines here are supposed to represent the surfaces of boundary. And now what I'm going to do is I can immerse this in this. And in fact, I'm going to draw my picture slightly differently. I'm going to make my pages a little bit wider so we can see how they fit in. Now I'm going to, so let's say I permuted, so, you know, these are my pages, and these are my pages over here, but they may be in some different order. So let's say this page, maybe if I have enough colors I can make this all very fancy looking. So let's give all the pages a different color. And then we'll do the same thing over here, but I'll put them in a different order. Okay, so now I'm going to map this into here, and each page has to be mapped to the correct spot. So this purple page has to be mapped into the purple, and the blue has to be mapped into the blue, and so on. Okay, and now I have to map this disk in, which, right, so here we have this annulus cross S1, and here we have a disk cross S1, so I have to map this disk in to finish the picture. And how does that work? Well, the disk is going to be immersed. Okay, so let's see, I start at the purple, then I go to the brown. And then I go to the blue. Okay, so if you look at this picture, this is just a disk mapped in, and if you see what I've done here, I've just taken this and I've immersed it in here. And I've done it in a very careful way so that if I take, so this is some immersion of this manifold in this drilled manifold, and you can check what I've done, and you can see it if I look at the image, so this is, if I take the fundamental group here and I look at its image in here, I've done it in such a way that this map lifts to an embedding when I take the cover corresponding to this subgroup. So when I unwrap by taking this cover, this thing is going to lift to an embedding. In particular, and that what that's going to tell us is when this lifts to embedding, it's going to tell us that cover is homeomorphic to this manifold. Okay, so, I mean, this is maybe an exercise you need to check at home to really believe, but you can do it. And a similar kind of construction works down here. So not only does the M's cover the M-hats, but the M-hats cover themselves. Sort of a very special property of these three manifolds. Yes. Yeah, in fact, there is an infinite distinct cover to this thing by this thing. Okay, so now let's add some hyperbolic geometry to the picture. So what does this have to do with the topology of deformation spaces? So let's state this theorem of Anderson and Canary. Okay, so what do I want to do? I want to take this three-manifold, this drilled three-manifold. Well, what I want to do is I want to take this topological cover, and then I want to make it hyperbolic. So how am I going to make it hyperbolic? I'm going to take this three-manifold on the right, and I'm going to make it into a hyperbolic three-manifold. I'm going to put some hyperbolic structure on it. Now I have this covering map, so that's going to induce a hyperbolic structure on the undrilled manifold also. And that hyperbolic structure on the undrilled manifold is going to be some point in AH. And this is what the result is. So if m tau and m hat tau prime are hyperbolic free manifolds, and m tau covers. So when I say covers, I mean as a hyperbolic free manifold. Then, I need one more bit of notation, which I'll write down the theorem, and then I'll say what the notation is. Then this point is in the closure of the component of AH corresponding to this marked hyperbolic free manifold. So B tau is the component of the interior of AH of N corresponding to tau. So let's draw a little picture. So what's the idea? So we have all these components of the interior. You know, one corresponding to tau, another one corresponding to tau prime, and well, we have one for every single one of these marked homeomorphism types. If we build a manifold in this way, what this theorem tells us is that this manifold, which has the marked homeomorphism type of tau, lies in the boundary of the component corresponding to the marked homeomorphism type of tau prime. So we're no longer in the interior. This one-to-one correspondence is only about components of the interior. This manifold we're constructing here is not going to be in the interior. So this is supposed to be our M tau. Okay, so well, if you make one other observation, you can see something even stronger. And what is that other observation? The other observation is that when you can prove that whenever you have that any manifold of marked homeomorphism type tau is also going to be in the closure of this tau component. So M tau will also be in the closure of the original tau component. So what this tells us is that if I take the intersection of these two components, it's not empty. Okay, so maybe this is when I'll make the little spiel about how this relates to the Mandelbrot set. So in the Mandelbrot set, you have sort of a somewhat similar phenomenon. You have all these components of the interior, and then they have these points where they intersect, where the two things touch or bump. So again, you know, these components of the interior, they're all these sort of structurally stable dynamical systems. But then when you take the closure, you get things that aren't structurally stable and these components can intersect. And just like in the Mandelbrot set, you want to understand how these, you know, when you have two different components, you want to understand when they intersect. We want to try and do the same thing here. Okay, so I'm going to try and say a word about the proof of this theorem, but I want to give one more result before I do that. So this is a theorem of John Holt, and the point here is that there's actually even stranger things can happen. Not only can two of these components have intersecting closure, but the whole collection will have intersecting closure. So remember, there are exactly n minus 1 factorial components. So if I take all of them, this is not empty. So not only do we have some picture that looks like this, where these two components are intersecting, but we have something crazier than that. We have tons of things coming in at a single point. So this space is sort of a mess. So how do you see this? Well, you can prove this from the Anderson-Canary theorem. And what's the point? Well, the point is, I guess I erased my little fact. Oh, the point is we can use fact 2 to prove this. So what do we do? Well, I can make a sequence of covers. So I can take m tau 1 covering m hat tau 1, and I can make m hat tau 1 cover m hat tau 2 all the way down the line. So this is a sequence of covers. All right, so now I just put a hyperbolic structure at the very end of my sequence. And then by the covers, that gives me hyperbolic structures all the way along the line. I get a cover here, a cover here, a cover here, and so on. So now I'm exactly in this situation. So now I have m tau 1 covers m tau I, m hat tau I, for all tau I. I have a single hyperbolic manifold that covers all these different drilled manifolds. So this theorem tells me that that single manifold is in the closure of every single component. Okay, so how do you prove this theorem? Let's talk about that a little bit. So the thing we need to talk about is something called Dane filling. We need a little bit of setup before we actually prove this. Okay, so what is Dane filling? Well, Dane filling is a process of when you take a three-manifold that has boundary torus and you glue on a solid torus. So let's just ignore everything we've done before, and just think a bit about this Dane filling process. So now let's assume N is a compact three-manifold, and T is a torus component of the boundary event. Okay, so when you have a torus, the fundamental group of a torus is just Z2, and we can pick a basis. So if we choose a basis for pi1 of t, then every simple closed curve on t is given by a relatively prime pair of integers. Okay, so what is Dane filling? Well, Dane filling So if I take some relatively prime pair of integers, I can define the PQ Dane filling, and this is going to be N union W, and W, this is going to be a solid torus. So we're going to take our original manifold, we're going to take some solid torus W, and we're going to glue them together along their boundaries with some equivalence relation, and what is that gluing going to be? So the way it's going to work is if we take our solid torus W, there is some special curve on this solid torus W. There's the curve that bounds a disk. And what this PQ Dane filling is going to be is we're going to glue this torus to the boundary of N, and we're going to take this meridian curve that bounds a disk in the solid torus to the PQ curve here. So this is mapped to the PQ curve on T. Okay, so this Dane filling is going to take our manifold that had a torus that had at least a torus in its boundary, and it's going to make a manifold where that torus is no longer a boundary component. We filled it in. That's why it's called Dane filling. So we're going to want to do this to our manifolds M hat. These manifolds have a torus boundary component, right? So we've drilled out the core of this solid torus, and that gives us a torus boundary component to the M hat. But to do that, we want to observe something. So let's just draw sort of a general picture here. So let's say we have some manifold and it has some higher genus boundary, and it also has a torus boundary, which I'm going to draw on the inside. And I also want to assume that if I take a curve on this torus, it's isotopic to a curve on this other boundary component. So another way of looking at what we have here is take some three-manifold with boundary, take a curve on the boundary of that three-manifold, push it inside the three-manifold, and remove it. That's the picture I want to look at here. All right, so there's sort of a natural way to choose the basis in this case. And what I can do is I can choose the basis so that, well, let's pick some, so we have this curve, this special curve that's isotopic to a curve on the other boundary component. And now I'll pick some curve that intersects that special curve once. And then I'm going to choose my basis so that this purple curve is the 1-0 curve, and the brown curve is the 0-1 curve. Okay, so here is sort of a nice fact. If I do this, then n, when I do 1n Dane filling, this is homeomorphic to doing 1-0 Dane filling. Let's see, let's draw the picture. Okay, so the brown curve is isotopic to something on the boundary, and the purple curve intersects that brown curve once. And the brown curve is the 1-0 curve, that's right. What? Right. And no matter how you choose it, this statement is still going to hold. So if I do 1n Dane filling, it's the same as doing 1-0 Dane filling. Yes, that's right. So what is the point? The point is that there is a self-homeomorphism of this manifold that takes the 1-0 curve to the 1n curve. And what that homeomorphism is you do a Dane twist along this boundary component. So it's a good exercise to think about. Okay. So that's the topology, and again we want to do some hyperbolic geometry. So now we want to do hyperbolic Dane filling. Okay, so what is hyperbolic Dane filling? Well, I just add hyperbolic geometry to the situation. So instead of taking a topological manifold, I want to assume that I take a hyperbolic free manifold. And when I do the Dane filling, I want to get back a hyperbolic free manifold. Well, how do you know that you can do that? Well, you have to work. So the statement that I'm going to make here, I guess, put some names on here. So what's the point? So if I take a hyperbolic free manifold that has a, what do I want to do? I want to take a hyperbolic free manifold that has a torus boundary component. Well, that doesn't really make sense because the manifold is not going to be compact. So I guess that strictly speaking, I want to take a hyperbolic free manifold where it's a hyperbolic structure on the interior of the manifold with a torus boundary component. And then I want to fill in that torus. And what this theorem that I'm going to write down in a second tells us is that we can, as long as P and Q are sufficiently large, we can always do that. And we can do it in such a way that we can control the geometry. So let's let M be a complete geometrically finite hyperbolic structure on the interior of N. So we have some manifold N that has a torus boundary component, and now we're assuming that we have some complete geometrically finite hyperbolic structure on its interior. So if P and Q are sufficiently large, there exists space. There exists a geometrically finite hyperbolic structure on the PQ Dane filling on the interior on the PQ Dane filling. Now let's give this a name. Let's call this MPQ. And furthermore, and an L by Lipschitz map and I'm going to just start trying. So what's the point? So we have our manifold, our hyperbolic manifold M. And this manifold, draw this bigger. This manifold M has this rank 2 cusp. And then I map it over here to MPQ, where this rank 2 cusp has been filled in. So there's going to be an L by Lipschitz map from the original manifold M minus the rank 2 cusp to the Dane-filled manifold MPQ minus this new solid torus. So draw it schematic. So near the cusp, this map is not going to be so nice. But away from the cusp, it's going to be a nice L by Lipschitz map. And in fact, you can do this for any L. You just need to choose P and Q larger. So maybe I should put that in part of my statement. Right here. Okay, so how can we use this to prove this theorem of an Anderson and Canary? All right, so what's the idea? So what we're going to do, so what do we have? So what is, we have this manifold M tau covering this M tau prime hat. Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to fill the M tau prime hat. And I'm going to fill it doing one end Dane filling. And what do I mean by one end Dane filling? Well, 1-0 Dane filling, this is supposed to give me back just the manifold M tau prime. But by this little topological fact I said over there, 1-0 Dane filling is the same as doing 1-n Dane filling. Okay, so for every integer n, I do this 1-n Dane filling. Well, as I do 1-n Dane filling, 1-n is going to be sufficiently large, right? N is going to go to infinity. So as n goes to infinity, I'm going to be able to find one of these L by Lipschitz maps that where the L is getting closer and closer to 1. Okay, so now let's look at what I have going on here. I have a map Here, let's take it. Yeah. I have a map from M tau into this this one-endian filling. And this map is looking more and more like an isometry. So what is this map? So this map makes this thing into a marked hyperbolic free manifold. And it's going to have the marked homeomorphism type of M tau prime. But as I take the limit, it's going to converge to M tau in this algebraic topology. And that's the rough idea. Now you have to say a bit more to make this work. I don't think I have time. So I wanted to talk about one other sort of fact about these deformation spaces. So what? So what is the picture we've seen so far? So we have all these components, and they're all intersecting. Their closures are all intersecting. And in fact, we have this theorem over here that says not only do they intersect, but pairwise, they all intersect as a group. There are points where all n minus 1 factorial of them intersect. There's sort of another phenomenon that happens, and that is they intersect themselves. What do we mean by that? Well, there's something called, here's the picture of what we mean. So these things can sort of come around and bump themselves. So let's give this a definition. So a component B of the interior of A H of N self bumps at some representation rho in B closure if there exists a neighborhood V of rho. So what is the idea? Well, the idea is that we want to pick some neighborhood so that for any smaller neighborhood, the intersection of that neighborhood with the interior is disconnected. Okay, so there exists a neighborhood V of rho such that for any neighborhood U contained in V, U intersect B is disconnected. Okay, so this is a theorem of myself and John Holt. So this self-bumping is sort of pervasive. I mean, so what do you need to have this self-bumping? Basically, all you need is to have your group split over Z. But rather than write that out specifically, let's just stick to our particular example. Every B tau self-bumps. So not only do these components intersect each other, but they sort of intersect themselves. So the picture is very complicated. Okay, so why don't I finish by just saying what's known in the more general setting. So if you look at a general three-manifold with incompressible boundary, then Anderson, there's a theorem of Anderson, Canary, and McCullough that tells us exactly when two components bump. So it's a complete characterization of when components bump. Maybe I'll stop that. Stop there. What is this complete character? So what is the point? So there's something called the theory of the characteristic submanifold. So whenever you can build, so how can you build hyperbolic three manifolds? Well, what's the picture I want to draw? I could take some three-manifold and I could bind it together in a way similar to what I did here. So let's say I have something three-manifold with some that has some heterogeneous surface on the boundary, and I can pick out different curves and all these things, and I can glue them together. It's sort of a generalization of this idea of a book of I bundles. And then you could do the same thing. You know, you could start shuffling around how you do all these gluings, and you're going to get different components. And those are always going to bump. So when are you going to get components that don't bump? Well, the basic example of when you're going to get components that don't bump is when you take these manifolds M hat in the book of I bundles case. So if you take a book of I bundles and you drill out the core, the core curve of the binding, then you're going to get an example of a three manifold where this space AN is infinite, and in that case, none of the components bump. So the general situation is you're going to have this splitting of your manifold into along these solid torus are going to break it into pieces. Well, it's going to be the solid torus plus the drilled solid torus are going to break it into pieces. And wherever the solid torus is happening, you're going to get sort of permutations that allow bumping. And wherever the drilled solid torus are happening, you're going to get permutations where bumping doesn't occur. They don't. They don't accumulate on each other. Yeah, so this is something. They don't accumulate. They just go out to infinity. Yeah, this doesn't. It's different from the Mandelbrot set. So every representation is in the closure of some component, which is already different from the Mandelbrot set. And no representation is going to be in the closure of an infinite number of components. They don't accumulate.